There's two more just coming on.
There we go. Mr. Co-Chair, are you okay? We start?
Let's go.
All right. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Ways and Means Joint Committee, Subcommittee on General Government. Today is, what's today? February 6th. We've got a quorum established here, and so why don't we take a few minutes and do introduction of our subcommittee members. And so if each one of you could introduce yourself to the committee and to the public, and do this. Tell us one thing that's super fun about you. Okay? So I want to know one thing that's super fun about you. Senator, why don't we start with you? We'll start that way and we'll work.
I don't think there's anything super fun.
I can already tell.
Person, so, anyway, Alan DeBoer, replacing under bad circumstances the late Senator Bates from Southern Oregon, Medford, Ashland, Talent, Phoenix, and Jacksonville. And I'm the newcomer.
We're glad you're here.
Good. Super fun. I'll give you one thing. So I fly a open wing cockpit steerman biplane, do aerobatics.
That's cool.
Someday we'll tool it up here.
All right. Mr. Co-Chair.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to give regrets for Senator Johnson. She was pulled away for another meeting. She said that she may have spoken with you about this. She's going to be giving us an update later on. She's talking about, well, I won't bring up the subject area, but I am the new senator at Senator District 7. I was appointed, and some of the things that I really compassionate about is making sure that we keep the Junction City Hospital open. Thought I'd throw that out there. We're looking forward to working with Representative Fahey on that issue and hoping that I can gather a lot of support from everyone. Fun things about me, I don't think there's anything. I haven't had any fun. I'm just coming over a leg injury and knee injury, so that's not fun. So, well, I guess the fun part is that I'm healing, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Representative?
Do you think maybe the theme here is people involved in government are not that much fun? Because I don't know what I'm going to say on that front either. But I'm newly elected to the Ashland area. So Senator DeBoer and I represent half of his Senate district, the part that is the most southerly, Ashland, Talon, Phoenix. So some rural, some urban developed, been a member of the Ashland City Council for 4 years. So that's kind of the essential government experience that I bring to this realm.
Nothing fun, really?
I'm actually pretty fun, but having to pick something out.
It's hard.
So I'm Julie Fahey, newly elected from House District 14, which is West Eugene, Junction City. Kind of a pretty varied district, has everything from rural areas to small town to certainly the urban areas of Eugene. So excited to be here. Fun about me, I'll do two fun things because they're related. So I'm big into hiking and backpacking, so I've climbed a number of the peaks in the Northwest. But I haven't done much of it lately because I ride a scooter in town, and I was in a scooter accident last year, so I hurt my ankle. Haven't been able to do the hiking and backpacking that I love for the last little bit. So, but
awesome.
On the mend, awesome. Like Senator Manning.
Representative?
Good. So I'm State Representative Mike Gehrman. I represent House District 23, and I'm not only Representative Fahey's neighbor on the dais here, but I'm also her neighbor. My
to
committee,
the north.
Her committee's directly south of mine, up to the Lane County border there. And then I'm not only Representative Gomberg's neighbor on the dais, I also neighbor his district on the west of mine there, and we kind of split the greater Sheridan, Willamina metropolitan area between our districts there. And so this is my first time on this committee, so I'm looking forward to it. And what's fun about me, I play ice hockey, and so this weekend I play a position that's quite different than I play in the legislature, which is left wing. On the hockey team, I'm at left wing. And then But on Tuesday, I'm on a different team, and I play the exact same position that I play in the legislature, which is goalie.
That's
We're
good.
Glad you're on the committee.
That's good.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. See, there are fun people here. I'm David Gomberg from House District 10 on the beautiful Oregon coast. I represent from Yahats to Tillamook and inland to Sheridan and Falls City, which gives me portions of Lincoln, Tillamook, Yamhill, and Polk County. And I'm starting my third term. My first term, I served on this committee. Mr. Co-Chair, I have to tell you, when I got the news, I thought I'd been assigned to the cul-de-sac of legislative committees. But after serving for a few months here, I found the work in this committee to be just fascinating. And it ignited my passion for pursuing uncollected debt. The more I learned about the money that is owed to Oregon by Oregonians, and I learned about it in this committee, the more interested I became in what we could do to try and get some of that money back and put it to good use. Now, am I a fun guy, too? I certainly hope so, but I am a professional kite flyer. And having flown kites in 40-plus countries, written a couple of books, and served some national organizations, I was inducted into the International Kite Flying Hall of Fame a couple of years ago. I'm not making this up. I'm in the International Kite Flying Hall of Fame.
That is amazing. Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. John, you got to tell us about yourself and something that's fun.
John Borden, Legislative Fiscal Office. Just a chauffeur to my children, so.
Thank you.
All right, you too. No one gets out of here without it. Tell us about yourself.
Michael Graham. I'll be your assistant. And something fun, I don't know if it's fun, but I lived a year and a half in Mexico.
What part of Mexico?
Hermosillo.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. Were you on a mission?
No, sir, I wasn't. I was in a boarding school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was an experience.
We're glad you're with us.
Thank you.
Come on.
I'm just training.
Are you still? You can still tell us.
I'm Julie. I'm a committee assistant. I'm returning. And I used to be the assistant for this committee. And I'm going to grad school now. That's not really fun, but it's kind of fun. And so I'm going to become a special education teacher.
Wow. Which grad school are you going to?
I'm at Western.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm
awesome.
In my
Congratulations. That's pretty cool. Patrick, come on, up here.
That's good.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Smith, Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee. Patrick Heath with the Chief Financial Office. And I have a number of administrative agencies, and I have the general government subcommittee coordination for DAS. And something fun about me, I really like to bake.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Mm. Yeah.
So we're expecting samples. That's awesome. We look forward to working with you.
Thank you, Cook. Yeah.
I'm Representative Greg Smith. I represent the Columbia River District that goes from Milton Freewater in Umatilla County all the way down to the Dalles and Duffer in Wasco County, have the Port of Umatilla, the Port of Morrow, Port of Arlington, Biggs Junction, and the Port of the Dalles in my district. Starting my ninth term in the House, I think is this my third term? Third term. Starting my third term on this committee. And really, really look forward to working with you folks. Married, five kids. All of them except for one are out of the house, and so we're excited about that. Something fun. Let's see here. I like to skateboard down at the beach as I go by your kite shop. And recently, I tripped my way through winning Dancing with the Stars at a local fundraiser in our community, and so that was kind of cool. So I did the Paso.
Paso de Doble?
Yeah, how do you say it? Paso, say it again.
Paso de Doble?
Yeah, yeah, which is Spanish for awkward white guy. And I tripped through it, but it was fun. So, okay, so let's see here. Co-Chair Manning, do you have any introductory comments you want to share with us? at this point?
Well, nothing specific right now. I'm interested in getting down, and after our brief that we had with the co-chairs earlier today, I think the process is going to be very interesting, but I've had a number of people already or departments and agencies that have stopped in to visit me, so everybody is saying probably the same thing that you're hearing. The task at hand is, what can we do in order to save a little bit here and, become more efficient. So I think that's going to be the big challenge I see ahead. I'm confident with, working together that we'll be able to solve a lot of these issues. If not, we'll come close to them.
Perfect. I want to express appreciation to the Senate President and to the Speaker for allowing us to serve on this committee. And I wanted to thank all of our staff who are working with us. It's you folks that make this process run really, really smooth. Just as a couple items to frame up for the committee, it's going to be really, really important that we start committee on time and that we stay on time. I can share with you my approach to chairing is I really try to make it as participatory as possible. Let everyone share their thoughts. Let everyone voice their opinions. Ask all the questions you want to ask. In the end, please know, though, that the co-chair and I have a responsibility to get through the agenda because we have to answer back to the co-chairs on the work that has been completed. So sometimes the co-chair and I may be prodding folks along to get the work completed. Attendance is going to be really important for work sessions. Give us a call. Let us know if you can't be here. We can adjust. If you've got to go testify in another bill, we can hold a bill up for a few minutes while you go testify, et cetera. But please let us know what's up so we can manage that. I'm going to create a rule when I'm co-chair. Mr. Co-chair, I hope you'll agree to this. We've got a lot of new members on this committee, and state budgeting, it may be new to some of you, I don't know. But I think we need to get rid of the acronyms. And so when we're dealing with the budget, yep. I think we should ask Mr. Co-Chair, you and I, to make sure all presenters say the words out in their entirety. Awesome. If that would be all right.
Absolutely.
Appreciated.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just relative to the attendance issue, my understanding now is that we're operating under rules where we can't even convene the meeting unless we have a quorum on both sides of the table for information sessions.
That
we can, people can come here, we can gavel in with a quorum, and if somebody needs to leave, they can leave, even if it affects the quorum. But we can't start until we've got two quorums here.
That is correct, Representative. So we need to be really sensitive to each other and make sure we get here so we can at least open up. Let's see here. If you have any significant questions, not the questions that come up during a committee process, but significant questions, please get them to John or to the co-chairs and I ahead of time. That way we can do our research accordingly to help. Let's see. And also, if there's any issues or measures that are really important to you that you want to make sure we're spending ample time on or digging deep into, please, again, let John or the co-chairs and I know, and we'll try to be sensitive to that. Just a few simple reminders. Please, watch what's going to be on the agenda. Make sure you do your reading ahead of time. Understand this, we are not like a policy committee, and so there's going to be no conceptual amendments. Okay, any amendments that we're going to offer to a bill will need to be approved by the co-chairs ahead of time. And so usually the way that process works is, let's say, Senator, you want an amendment to a bill, you'd get a hold of one of us, and we'd go with you and go sit down with the big dogs, co-chairs, and see if we can get them to approve it. But in this committee, all amendments must be approved by the co-chairs.
So, Representative, is that even for policy bills that come through this committee?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
That is correct, yep. Budget notes. Budget notes are a great way for us to remind agencies and departments legislative intent. Please know those also have to be approved by the big dogs, the Joint Ways and Means co-chairs. John and LFO staff can help draft those, but in the end, the co-chairs have to approve those. So let's see here. Is there anything else, John, you think I need to mention on this?
I don't think so.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to – any thoughts on any of those comments, remarks? Is there anything the co-chairs and I, co-chair and I can be doing to make the committee run smoother for any of you? We'll find out soon.
Four of us are new, so.
right. Okay, so what we're going to move to now is we're going to move into the subcommittee orientation and budget review. And, John, you're up.
Okay. Thank you, co-chair and members of the subcommittee. Out on OLIS are some of the key materials we'll be reviewing today. The first is the just today's agenda. Each day you'll have a daily agenda at your desk, but everything else for the subcommittee will generally be electronic. We have the orientation memo that's out there, the joint ways and means rules, so the full committee rules apply to the subcommittee rules, agency presentation instructions, federal grant application instructions. A presentation will go over about the state budget process at the high level, and then a summary of the budgets within the subcommittee and the positions in FTE authority, and then a brief that was written a few years ago on budget notes. But in particular, we'll walk through the subcommittee orientation materials. And as was noted, the subcommittee will meet from 3 to 4:30, Monday through Thursday in this room. If you have any issues with attendance, especially if there are work sessions scheduled, if you'd please call our mainline office and let them know. You can call Michael or whatever, but the mainline is the way, the best method, and the phone number's there. On subcommittee rules, again, they'll use the joint ways and means rules that were adopted last Thursday. The House and the Senate co-chairs will alternate every other meeting chairing. And then for quorum purposes, there will be three Senate members and five House members that will comprise quorums on each side. And both sides are necessary to report legislation out of the subcommittee. Most votes will just be taken on a voice vote only, unless there are objections. And if there are objections, Michael, the committee assistant, will call the roll call for it. The subcommittee does not have the power to hold legislation, so anything assigned to the subcommittee will move on to full. And in some instances, that may mean that it moves on without a specific recommendation, but it is to move on to the full committee for consideration.
So, John, really quick. So one of the things that will occur is the co-chair and I, as bills pass, will ask each of you to be a carrier, those of you who are on full ways and means. Who's on full ways and means from our committee? Okay. So these folks, so please don't take it personal if we don't ask you to carry a bill, because as John was saying, our job is then to take it to the full committee.
Excuse me, Mr. Co-Chair. Yes. Members who are not on full ways and means can still carry on the floor if they are
correct.
Interested in that.
That's correct. Yeah, yeah. And so if there's any bill you do want to carry on the floor, let us know, and we'll try to accommodate that.
Mr. Co-Chair, just to clarify the time of meeting, 4:30 is the general expectation for when the meetings will be over?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I read 5 in a different thing.
When I'm chairing, we'll do everything we can to be out here on time. please go ahead. Sorry.
Mr. Co-Chair, member of the committee, a couple other notes. There, per the Ways and Means Rule, no minority reports. And one thing just that's not in the notes, but just for consideration, staff will try to assist with this, but just be careful of quorum requirements out when you leave and go into separate meetings outside of here. And staff will try to assist with that, but that's just something to kind of keep in the back of your head.
So, John, can you give a brief example on that?
Well, for example, if the committee had to recess for a few minutes to discuss a particular issue, and everybody wanted to go out in the hall, that would not be permissible. So we would have to make sure that that everyone leave, if only certain members leave, so that a quorum was not satisfied out in the hallway. And again, staff is cognizant of that and will help you manage that as best we can.
Perfect. Thank you.
Are the quorums separate from the Senate to the House, or is it all the committee? So like James and I can meet, we're two of the three.
And Mr. Co-Chair and Senator, that's correct. So they'd be separate. It'd be the quorum of the committee.
Okay.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, is that...
Please.
So they can go out and meet together even though they're two of the three, or they can't?
Co-chair and representative, yes, they can.
Okay.
So, and that will frequently happen, especially on a chamber basis, but not the entire.
Where usually it'll play out is as we get late into session, the co-chairs will send a bill down to us, and for example, you and I will go out in the hall to discuss it with the other co-chairs or leadership. And it's very natural for members to want to come out and find out what's going on. We just have to be very careful of that because we don't want to violate Oregon law.
Okay, so may I ask, I guess the question is, what is the magic number that you can't?
So if
in order to reach a quorum outside.
So two senators and
three
reps would constitute a quorum.
Okay.
Yeah, any combination. Two or three.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to move through this pretty quickly, and I'm happy to be available outside of the committee meeting if any issues come up. All the meeting materials, again, will be posted on OLIS and available for your review electronically, so generally nothing printed. You can print your own and bring them, but nothing will be available in printed copy. For the agendas, there'll be the standard meeting notice is 72 hours for the first public hearing and 48 hours for subsequent public hearings and work sessions. And as we get close to the end of session, that timeline may change. Again, amendments must be submitted electronically and posted with 1 hour notice before consideration. That's part of the Ways and Means rules. And carrying over measures from the next day is permissible, but the co-chairs will the subcommittee co-chairs will have to specifically note that when that does occur. So on agency budgets, there's a list out on OLIS of agency budgets and budget measures. The subcommittee has assigned 14 budgets, and these are the budget measures by agency with the legislative fiscal office analyst and the Department of Administrative Services chief financial office. So that's the main bread and butter of the committee here, these budget bills. And there's several notes that are unique about them. One is that there are the separately elected constitutional offices that don't receive executive branch oversight. And so those are the Secretary of State and Treasurer and, of course, the legislative agencies. So the point there, and we'll discuss this more tomorrow, is that the oversight really occurs here in the legislative branch when those budgets move their way through the process. The co-chairs have issued uniform instructions on how presentations are to be made, and those presentation instructions, again, are posted out on OLIS, but it's essentially a three-phase process. Phase one, where you'll spend the most of your time for roughly the next 7 weeks or so, will be an educational phase. Agencies will come in. There will be a brief LFO overview of issues to look out for. There will be the agency's detailed presentation, which may be for small agencies 1 day, for large agencies up to a week. And they'll go through their organizational structure. They'll go through their budgets, performance metrics, any recent audits, reduction options, and just the standard protocol so that you really have a good understanding of what that agency does. It will be the agency director or major division directors that will come in and make those presentations. And then at the conclusion of the agency, the Department of Administrative Services Chief Financial Office will come up and give an overview of the governor's budget, with the exception of those separately elected offices where there'll be no CFO presentation. So that's kind of phase one, a real educational phase. Phase two is 3 weeks that are set aside for more in-depth discussions, issues of where you need to deep dive, specific budget requests and other things. As Representative Gomberg noted, maybe the collections process, collections resourcing, items like that, agency major initiatives that require funding, deeper dive on reduction options, whatever it may be. That will be by invitation only. So only select agencies will come through that process. That process will conclude, and then the remaining phase three is work session. And that's where the smaller agencies, if they don't have a lot of budget issues and maybe are ready to go, they will be brought before the subcommittee and work sessioned. The larger agencies will move through a little bit later on with the final decisions on, or final recommendations on their budget for the subcommittee to review. So this was the same process that was used last biennium, and it's a nice, and it's a good process.
I would share with the committee really quick. During the first phase, ask lots of questions. Ask lots of questions, and don't be afraid to ask a question thinking, gosh, you know, I'm new here, you know, people are going to think it's silly. I can assure you, I've been here 9 sessions. I need help on these questions. So everyone, please, please ask them. We'll accommodate everyone. Is that okay, Mr. Co-Chair?
Perfect.
And then Mr. Co-Chair and I, as we get into the third round, that's where you and I have to kind of flex a little bit and make sure the work of the co-chairs gets completed. And so at that point, please ask questions if you need to, but at that point our job is to be moving budgets. And so round one and round two is where we really have that opportunity to dig in, but when we get to round three, it's time to move things along.
Mr. Co-Chair, member of the committee, in particular, when the subcommittee asks questions of agencies, they've been asked to provide a written response within a 2-day time frame, give or take on the complexity of the question asked. Those agency responses will be placed on OLIS as a follow-up the next day or the next available day for the committee to review. And agencies will then discuss those as they kind of go through their presentations. Agency presentations in phase one will conclude with a public testimony day. Part of that day, if it's one day, the last 15 or so minutes, and for multi-day presentations, the final day of their phase one hearing. There's some documents then that are going to be on OLIS that you need to be aware about. I kind of alluded to them. There'll be a legislative fiscal office brief 2-3 page analysis for each agency that highlights budget issues, potential budget issues, issues of concern for you to look at. Then there will be the governor's recommended, the governor's printed budget for the agencies. And that's a quite thick binder. I meant to bring one. It can be a substantial binder for the large agencies. A lot of budget detail in there, but also a lot of good programmatic information, organizational charts, mission, vision, statutory authorities, things like that. That's a good resource. The agency will then have their PowerPoint presentation, and maybe even another narrative presentation that is very handy, a little bit higher level. And then the CFO will have their PowerPoint presentation to bring forward. Again, for those executive branch agencies that fall underneath their control. We've kind of talked about work sessions. So work sessions will also include their key performance measures. So their budget bill will be worked through the subcommittee, and then review of their key performance measures and those associated recommendations will be part of that review and recommendation process as well. There was some discussion of the budget notes, and again, there's a nice brief out there that discusses budget notes in detail for the newer subcommittee members and what their purpose is. Most generally, they're a reporting requirement, but there are others that can be far more specific. Again, the full Ways and Means co-chairs approve those budget notes for inclusion, and LFO staff is happy to work with you on the language for those particular budget notes. For LFO staff, I'm the subcommittee's coordinator. But there will be seven other analysts that rotate through that have other budget assignments, so other budget bills. So you'll actually see quite a few people from LFO cycle through the subcommittee. The co-chair mentioned ponies. Again, ponies are brief staff written documents unique to Ways and Means that help members make sure that they get the figures and the facts right when it comes to budget measures. And then once those are kind of read on the record, there's an opportunity to add additional information that maybe the member has, but there's a kind of a real import to make sure that those ponies are read completely. And then after that, more of a, if you wanted to go beyond the pony, that's perfectly acceptable.
Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And I do appreciate those one-page summaries of legislation when I'm carrying bills, as well as greatly appreciate your staff coming and joining us on the floor in case there are additional questions. My question to you is, where did the phrase pony come from?
That was my question, too.
If I may, Co-Chair, apparently there's not been any research where that phrase came from. I think I've heard that it is actually carrying the bill, so it's like a pony would do. That's the best item I have, but nobody's ever taken the time to research it. But as the representative,
could you follow up on that and get back to us with a written report?
I'll head right over to the archives. But as a representative,
for the record,
said,
I'm only kidding.
You've got 2 days to do that. Right?
When you're assigned, the co-chairs will assign you to carry a measure, and the first carrier for the chamber will carry it in full committee also. And then the other carrier can be someone other than even a Ways and Means Committee member. When that bill goes to the full committee, LFO staff is there in the audience. When it goes to the floors, LFO staff is either in the side aisle or at your request seated beside you to help answer technical questions about the measure. So we're there to kind of support you through the process.
Really quick, it might be neat for each of you freshmen to do it once. It's a pretty cool experience. I mean, and then it gives you a little bit of background knowledge on how this all plays out. And so it's pretty simple.
This subcommittee will be in a position where it will receive recommendations from the Joint Information Management Technology Committee about IT projects that are going through the process for the agencies within this subcommittee. And also, any bonding related requests, the subcommittee will be making recommendations to the Capital Construction Subcommittee on what their feelings are of those requests. So there's kind of this interface between several other full committees or subcommittees. There's some great information out on the Legislative Fiscal Office's website, and during the interim, LFO publishes budget briefs, budget information briefs, and there's kind of two variants of them. There are budget summaries of session activities and detailed analyses. I would call out the detailed analyses in particular, and that is if you would like some more background on specific agencies, to read through those detailed analyses. And they're written in a more common language than a lot of the other budget publications are, so you can get a good flavor for what their budgets are, statistics, how they're spending it, what their revenue sources are at more of a detailed level. And those are only done for the adopted budget, legislatively adopted budget. And if you have any difficulty finding them or want me to help point them out, I'd be happy to. There's a second piece of the LFO website, which includes some key publications. And some of note that I would maybe have, especially the new members, look at. There's some on the marijuana program. So it's a multi-page background on the marijuana program. That will be, you'll hear pieces of that this session as the Department of Revenue comes through. There's some on limited durations positions, some on how positions are funded, pension obligation bonds, and then the most recent, and as well as past liquidated and delinquent account reports. So some good information out there as background. I know you have a lot of reading to do. And if you want recommendations on what particular ones that I would suggest you kind of make sure you read, I'll be happy to give you that information offline. Are there any questions? That's kind of the general overview that each of the subcommittees are receiving. And next, what I'd like to do is go through a high level. This is the statewide kind of budget look and background. And then tomorrow we'll talk specifically about the budget in the at a high level in this subcommittee, what the budgets are in the general government subcommittee and what those look like. So, and I apologize, Representative Gomberg, you've heard this before, and so the broad authority overall for the state budget is that it must be balanced under these general constitutional provisions. So that's the primary purpose of the legislature, and to accomplish that, that has to be done through a lot of detailed effort throughout the session, including this subcommittee's work. So essentially, this subcommittee is giving a target for which it must balance, and every other subcommittee are given their targets. So in order to achieve the balanced budget, it requires all these bits and pieces of the budget to come together. The principles by which the Oregon budget policy is done is again, balancing revenues with proposed expenditures, allocating those resources to achieve desirable outcomes, measuring program outcome and progress toward desired results. In other words, through the key performance system is one way to do that, or in one way that is accomplished. Encourage savings and investments and avoiding future costs. Planning for the short and the long term using consistent assumptions and demographic trends. And then providing accountability at all levels for measuring program outcomes. So to assist in all this is the Legislative Fiscal Office is a provides objective research, analysis, and evaluation of state expenditures, financial affairs, program administration, and agency operations. LFO provides staffing to several legislative committees, which we'll talk about in a minute. This was part of the reforms in 1959. We're a nonpartisan independent office that serves all legislators. We primarily work for the Joint Ways and Means Committee, but assist any legislator that would come down. Our authority for the office is quite broad because unless we understand the policy, we really can't understand the budget. So, but again, nonpartisan and independent, and work across the breadth of state government. Organizationally, LFO has a budget of right or just under $9 million and 22 positions. The budget has been pretty, the number of positions has been pretty stable over time. There are kind of three flavors of positions that I'll visit about. But first is the Legislative Fiscal Officer, Ken Rocco. Then there's the Deputy, Paul Siebert. And then the Fiscal Office Manager is Gina Rumbaugh. She is the legislative process guru of our office and keeps us all on track. After that, the three variants are fiscal analysts. So there's about 3,000 to 4,000 bills that work their way through the legislative process. By far, the majority of them are policy or substantive bills, and a little over 100 are budget bills. So those fiscal analysts do fiscal impact statements. So they're that kind of the early warning system for the budget process. And their fiscal impact statements are based upon our office's analyses of what agencies submit to our office. So they're not just what agencies say the fiscal is on bills. It's our office's analysis of those bills. So again, what that process is trying to do is alert the budget process to measures that cost money. So you saw the 14 bills that will come through the subcommittee. Those are the primary budget bills of each agency. But if there is additional statutory authority granted with a policy bill that costs money, well, that's in addition to that budget bill. So those are the fiscal analysts. And then you have the budget analysts, both senior and principal, who work on the large agencies and the medium-sized agencies. And several of the and some of the principal analysts, of course, do subcommittee coordination. Within the office, in the last few biennia, have been added two information technology positions as principal analysts that evaluate the major IT projects. And then most recently, we've added a new position for bonding, a bonding specialist. And you will see her in here because Amanda has actually several budget assignments within our subcommittee, so we'll get the benefit of her expertise. So that's the general structure of LFO. Our responsibilities include, during the session, just to review agency budgets for accuracy, analyze the fiscal and policy issues, examine revenue resources, expenditure limitations, expenditure patterns, staffing, and proposed law changes. And then we review the impact of budget reductions or enhancements. But this next bullet, what is really unique to LFO is compared to other staff in the building, is LFO makes recommendations. So LFO will make recommendations to the legislature on agency budgets. We do this both from our expertise and understanding and also at the direction of the co-chairs of Ways and Means. We work again with the fiscal analysts on fiscal impact statements, respond to questions and collect information that legislators may have, facilitate bill amendments, budget notes, budget reports, presentations, and again, assist bill carriers on both the House and the Senate side. So for interim responsibilities, we analyze and make recommendations on agency requests to the Emergency Board and the Interim Joint Committee on Ways and Means. And we'll talk more about this process. We evaluate and audit programs where issues are identified or directed by the legislature, analyze reports and make recommendations on major information technology projects and expenditures and investments, publish the budget briefs I spoke to you about, regularly produce the liquidated and delinquent accounts in the semi-independent state agency report, review state agency budget execution and operations, and consult with agencies as needed on their execution of their budgets, and then work to just enhance the effectiveness of the statewide key performance measurement system, and then other duties as assigned.
Representative Gumberg.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and I apologize for being so vocal today, but one of the things you touched on is reports that you produce on delinquent accounts, and I would certainly urge colleagues that you get a copy of that report, which is available on an annual basis from LFO. It's interesting reading. One of the agencies that we'll be hearing from in this committee has about $600 million a year in uncollected revenues. But more to the point, we're going to be looking at legislation this year that would direct all delinquent accounts over 90 days to the Department of Revenue. And I think it would be worthwhile for us to have a sense of what all delinquent accounts constitutes. That number is, in fact, well over $3 billion, billion with a B. So I'd encourage you to pick up a copy of that account or at least grab it electronically and take a look at how that's dispersed through various agencies in the state.
Any other questions?
Nope. Other states, for their legislative fiscal offices, could be organized quite differently. They can have staffs for both chambers. They can have staffs for not only both chambers, but each party within each chamber, the minority and the majority party. So this is a very efficient structure, cost-effective structure that Oregon has and relies upon. The LFO staffing includes, again, the Emergency Board, Joint Legislative Audit Committee, Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology, and the Transparency Oregon Advisory Commission. So right now is a good time to kind of talk about the flow of how the budget works. So we're in the long session right now. The long session will conclude, and this has been the general sequencing of events, and it obviously could be subject to change, but we're in the long session. We'll leave the long session. There will be an interim period, but running up to the short February session. And then after the February session, there will be generally quarterly emergency board meetings. And then after that, we're back into another long session. So legislative fiscal office's staffing kind of flows along those. We analyze interim ways and means reports that come through and other items. Interim ways and means has limited authority to take action on items. They mainly can hear reports and grants. The February meeting of the legislature, again, they have full statutory authority to make budget adjustments. And then when we get into the emergency board has more limited authority to adjust agency budgets. They can't reduce them. They can generally increase them or rebalance them. And then we're, again, back into the full session. So that's kind of the overall, that's kind of the cycle of the process. As far as the budget process, it's again a biennial process, July 1st to June 30th of odd numbered to June 30th of odd numbered years. So we'll start with our first acronym. So LAB, that's the legislatively adopted budget. So that's the budget that is adopted when you leave session. So that's the long session, the budget that the agency leaves session with. If there are any changes to that, it becomes the approved budget. So there are limited opportunities for those changes. That would be February or generally the emergency board. And of course, if the legislature were called into special session, they could also make adjustments to those budgets. So agencies leave on, let's say, July 1st with a legislatively adopted budget. They go immediately into implementation. That implementation is overseen primarily by the Department of Administrative Services, the Chief Financial Office, and an LFO to some extent. Agencies that require budget adjustments may appear before the emergency board with a formal request or the short session in February. And then from there, they quickly go into budget development for the next biennial period and start preparing what's called an agency request budget, an ARB. That ARB is then transmitted to the governor, and the governor makes recommendations on that budget, changes to that budget, produces a governor's budget, and then that budget comes over to the legislature. And I'm sorry, I didn't do a very good job on that chart, but this one is a little bit clearer about the process.
Question?
Oh, yeah, representative.
Okay. So here's a newbie question. We have a budget for any given agency that's prepared by the agency that has their basic services plus their wish list. We have a governor's budget, which does something with that agency's proposal. And then we have a Ways and Means co-chair's budget that does yet something else. So when the agencies come in here to present, which of those budgets are we working with?
That's a great question.
An excellent question.
Representative, they come in here, and the budgets that will be before you are the governor's. They'll be working off the governor's budget. So that's the latest budget, and then from there, with the co-chair's direction, you'll begin crafting the legislatively adopted budget.
Does that answer your question? Representative.
So I have a question. If we do not adjourn by July 1st, what happens then? Because it says the budgeting in your two-year budget cycle slide, the biennium starts July 1st.
Mr. Co-Chair.
A great question.
I believe the constitutional deadline is July 10th,
mm-hmm.
but what happens is that for that period until their actual budgets are passed, the legislature passes what's called a continuing resolution to give them authority to continue operating. And so you'll see that bill go through. It's always prepared in case it's needed, and you may see that bill advance during session. That's mm-hmm. one of the things the Legislative Fiscal Office works on. Very good question.
Yeah, excellent. Any other questions from the committee? Please continue.
So the governor's budget will come over. The co-chair's framework, which you've seen, begins the discussions. LFO is, of course, analyzing the budget. Legislative leaders and the co-chairs start setting priorities. LFO makes decisions and recommendations on budget options. The subcommittees meet and are going through the process we outlined. Full Ways and Means begins final budget balancing in late May, and then the legislature approves final budgets. So there's some key demarcations in your schedule for the next 6 months or so, or next 5 months. In February, there'll be a revenue forecast, general fund revenue forecast, that kind of informs the process. But the May revenue forecast, general fund forecast, is absolutely critical. After that, then the budget can be pegged and decisions can be made and budgets can start flowing through the process. The budget is constructed along four major fund types: general fund, lottery fund, other funds, and federal funds. So the general fund is fungible, which means it has the ability to be used for multiple purposes. The lottery funds are generally dedicated to economic development, education, parks, salmon habitat, and now veterans. The other funds are a little bit tricky, and you will learn how tricky they are in this subcommittee, because this subcommittee has to deal with the issue right up front. And so other funds in general can be fees or a tax. For example, the gas tax, they can be bonding proceeds. They're always set in statute. The funding source is set in statute. The fee may or may not be in statute, but their authority for that revenue source arrives in statute. Always looking at what the balances are in those other funds, if they're carrying too much or too little. The nuance with this subcommittee especially is that, for example, some agencies are assessment funded, so they assess other agencies for their services. When they do that, those assessments may be paid using general fund or lottery funds or federal funds or other funds. So in other words, within this other funds for this subcommittee could be indirect general fund or lottery funds. So there'll be a clear discussion of that as you guys move through the assessment agencies of, like, the Department of Administrative Services. Their budget looks entirely like it's other funded, when in fact there's a significant portion of it that is indirect general fund. The same for the Employment Relations Board and others that are assessment-based agencies. The federal funds that go through the process, the subcommittee doesn't have much, but they have some federal funds. The initial application for those federal funds requires legislative approval, but once that's granted, then the federal funds just continue to flow through the process. Other funds and federal funds are broken into limited and non-limited categories, and we'll talk more about this tomorrow, but non-limited categories are those where the expenditures are really outside the legislature's control. And examples of those may include PERS retiree benefits, food stamps, and other programs where it would be difficult to constantly come in and be adjusting those budgets. The other budgets are limited And those are limited by the statutory authority by which you set in your bills that move through this committee, so both for federal and other funds.
So, John, let me add really quick. This has been excellent. One of the things I learned a long time ago is the sooner I can understand which budgets are primarily general fund, which budgets are primarily federal funds, and which budgets are primarily other funds, the sooner this process will make sense. And so if there was any kind of 101 study and I would do as a new member, it's to figure out what color is each source of money and what's it used for. That'll make the process much, much simpler to understand.
And co-chair, tomorrow is going to be focused on that initial attempt to start framing that up. There's one thing within the process that as background that you'll hear more of, and that is scheduling and unscheduling. As agency budgets are approved, they're subject to allotment authority, as long as with the exception of the constitutional offices. And what that allotment authority does is it takes a biennial budget and divides up the expenditures according to when they're needed over the 8 quarters of the biennium. So, and why is that important from your perspective? Is because as those expenditures are scheduled for release, then they are available to be expended by the agency. So there's a term called unscheduling, which allows you to make a request to the Department of Administrative Services to make a certain subset of the funds you approve, whatever it may be, unavailable for expenditure until a certain requirement is met. For example, they come back and an agency comes back and reports on their IT project is satisfied certain foundational documentation, and then the funds may be released for the agency to expend. So I mention that because there are three key things that the agency needs when it comes to especially other funds. They need the cash in the bank, they need the allotment authority to be able to expend it, and they need the expenditure limitation from their budget bill. If one of those things are missing, then the agency will be unable to obviously spend those funds. The state has two major budgeting systems. It's the Oregon Budget Information Tracking System, ORBITS. That's where all the budget detail is entered. For positions, that's a separate system that feeds into ORBITS. That's the Position Information Tracking System. But the budget is based upon these major categories: personal services, which includes salaries and wages and all the all the other benefits, the fringe benefits, and some other items. There's a vacancy adjustment. Services and supplies, those are the normal things you'd expect: telephone, professional services, smaller expenses property purchase, material purchases. The attorney general costs are also in this category. Then there's the capital outlay. Those items are valued at more than $5,000. So when you see an expanded program come through, they need desks, they need computers, things like that. That's where those expenditures fall. Special payments are exactly that. They're basically payments out to certain entities. Some of the examples of special payments are, again, payments to retirees or revenue payments to counties for certain tax programs within, like, the Department of Revenue, you'll see. Capital improvements is the first level of kind of construction projects that are less than $1 million. The subcommittee will see very few, if any, of those. And then major construction is construction projects for over $1 million. That limitation can be somewhat unique because it's generally approved for 6 years. And approval of that goes through the capital construction subcommittee. So it would be generally a recommendation of this subcommittee. The budget also tracks positions and full-time equivalents. the budget process details. The appropriation bills are the budgetary control. So they, within the bills that you will pass out of this subcommittee, will tell agencies specifically how much general fund they can spend and what their other and federal funds limitations are and how much lottery funds they can spend. These are session law or Oregon law bills, which means that they're generally just live for the life of the biennium only, as opposed to Oregon revised statute. Appropriation bills are not detailed at the expenditure category level. They're just a high-level number. Appropriation bills are by fund type and may be total agency or detailed to programs within the agency. The budget report is what explains the bill. The budget report is essentially a fiscal impact statement and a staff measure summary that's brought together that documents the decisions of the subcommittee and kind of puts the bill in plain language. And that budget report is key for a couple reasons. That's where, of course, budget notes go. That's where key performance measures are approved. But it's also an audit document. It's one thing when agencies say, well, the subcommittee told me to do this. We go back and we look and say, for documentation to say, what did the subcommittee actually direct? When items are entered into the state's budget system, this is the report they use to make sure they enter things appropriately based upon what your intentions are. Again, the budget process, the 5,000 series bills are the budget bills. So a little over 100 of those. They range from small budgets, small biennial budgets, to major biennial budgets. Budgets for bonding and capital construction are in separate bills. So at the end of each session, you'll see a bonding bill go through. You'll see a capital construction bill go through. These are the last bills that go through generally the legislative process and the joint ways and means process. The Constitution limits appropriation bills to current expenditures, no other subject allowed. In other words, if you have a bill that says relating to public employees' retirement system, an amendment couldn't be made to that bill that provided for a reform of that system. It's just the budget for the public employees' retirement system.
Yeah, really quick on that, John. There's a real misunderstanding among the public at large that thinks we have the ability to go and grab policy issues and just sneak them into the budget in the 11th hour. We don't do that in Oregon. It just doesn't work that way.
So, again, you'll pass the agency's primary budget bill, and then there are other bills through the process that may add or take away from that bill. So you'll pass the agency's primary budget bill. There will be an end-of-session omnibus bill that maybe makes adjustments to DAS assessments or maybe provide specific appropriations or limitations for projects. So it's not just a single bill generally for which an agency's legislatively adopted budget is based upon, but it's this cumulative total of whatever bill impacts their budget. So we talked about the phased approach. Budget notes, federal grants. This subcommittee deals with little federal funds, but we may have one federal grant for the state library coming through. Your work session, your first report on Wednesday, which is the semi-independent report that's done biennially. There's another report that you will do that's statutorily required for PERS, the Public Employees Retirement System, on their earnings crediting, which you'll do midway through the phase one process. You can have informational hearings as needed if they're approved by the co-chairs and the sub-chairs. You may have a fee bill that comes through. What we try to do with fee bills, if they come through, is marry them up with the actual budget so that you work them together. So this subcommittee, generally what happens, it has the 14 budget bills, and it has roughly a similar amount of policy bills that get referred to this subcommittee and are actually worked. So that kind of informs you what the end of your session will look like. You'll be work sessioning both primary budget bills through the process and any co-chair approved policy bills. So this is for the current biennium. This is just a quick look of what the budget looks like. So the 15-17 legislatively approved budget. So approved again is the signal to us that the budget that came out of the 15 session has been adjusted by both actions in the February session as well as any emergency board actions. This gives you the context for where the general fund is. There's always this confusion about people thinking the general and lottery fund budget are the state's budget, but in actuality, the state's budget, when including the other funds and federal funds, is much, much larger, the $71 billion figure. This is the same budget broken down by program area. And we'll get into more detail of why the administration program area is so comparatively big tomorrow as we work through the budgets within your subcommittee. But this just gives you a flavor of where those dollars are being spent and kind of the elephants in the room. This is just the general and lottery fund portion of that same budget. Where is the general fund being spent? So administration, again, just a small sliver, but what as we've kind of talked about, we have indirect general fund in your subcommittee. And so this is just the pure general fund going through the process. So when it comes to budget reductions, this is how the pie, this is for this current biennium at least, this is how the pie is looking about where those general fund reductions have to come from.
See, and that's awfully challenging, because if you look at the pie there, if you take $1 and try to move it somewhere else, the question is, are you taking it away from grandma? Are you taking it away from your kids? Or are you taking it away from the police? I mean, these are tough questions that we're going to have to collectively work through this session.
This is this chart. This next chart is just an all funds budget history, and the growth of the budget over time.
You know, John, would be interesting on that chart is if it was matched up with population growth.
That's a good point.
Yeah, because it's kind of deceptive. Because on the one hand, you know, it's look at it keeps growing. But the population of the state also continues to grow.
That's right. Inflation.
Yeah, inflation as well.
This is the same chart based upon general and lottery funds. And I'm sorry, co-chair and members of the committee, I'm moving pretty quickly through these, if that's
all
right.
You're perfect.
We talked about this expenditure categories. So this is a good flavor. This is the total funds look about where the dollars are being spent. So personal services, service and supplies, capital outlay, debt service, and then special payments. Again, what are the special payments? Retiree benefits, food stamps, unemployment claims, so on and so forth.
Representative Gumbert.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Going back a slide, and we talk about two slides, and I was looking at the portion of our funding that comes from the federal government. To what degree is LFO looking at possible changes in funding that may be coming from Washington?
Co-chair and Representative Gumbert, especially the human services area folks are highly attuned to that, so they are looking at those changes in potential flow of federal funds. And I think you bring up there's another point to bring up too, and that is LFO is just not looking at general and lottery funds. We're looking at all these funding sources. Mm-hmm. And so, but Linda Ames, Lori Byerly, and others that rely, their program areas that rely upon federal funds are following, tracking that very closely.
Thank you.
That's an excellent question, especially with everything going on in DC right now.
We will talk about this a little bit more. Again, our program area has very little federal funds, but there are two key things about federal funds to keep in mind. One is sometimes they're matching funds, so there has to be a match to those federal funds, and other times there's a maintenance of effort. And so that will be discussed, especially in relation to the state library when it comes through the process. Some of the key budget drivers, and you kind of alluded to them before, population growth, demographic changes, inflation, healthcare cost, mandated caseload, really not an issue in this subcommittee. You know, mandated caseload changes can be both on the human services side, what are the latest caseload forecasts, or on the side with Department of Justice, for example, their defense of criminal convictions. So the budget process allows for those changes based upon updated forecast numbers. Federal policy changes, again, lawsuits, ballot initiatives, roll-up costs, public employees' retirement system costs, replacement of one-time revenues, and just state policy directions.
So really quick, mandated caseloads, that means something statutorily or constitutionally or federally or contractually is requiring us to do something as it relates to a specific area that may have a caseload with it.
Co-chair, I think that's generally true. It's
something's driving,
yes,
the requirement that we manage a particular issue.
Yes, there's a specific caseload within the budget that is growing, that growth is just can't be accounted for as an inflation factor. Right. It's accounted for discreetly so that we can reach out and touch it and see exactly what the growth is, and then start asking questions of what the drivers of that growth are.
And some of those we can control, but others are beyond our control.
Exactly.
Okay.
And co-chair and member of the committee, those are pieces of the budget where we, as we kind of move through the process, we try to get updates or reshoots of those just to make sure that you're working from the most current information. Because obviously when the budget is developed between session, things can change quite substantially, either positive or negative.
So we've got about 15 minutes, John.
Okay, budget issues facing the legislature, rebalancing the 15-17 budget. So there will be an omnibus bill that makes some minor tweaks to the current legislatively approved budget. Revenue forecast changes, potential difficulties, continuing current general fund programs and services, governor and other stakeholder budget proposals, potential issues such as lawsuits or decreasing federal funds, as you noted, state employee and non-state employee compensation, the ballot initiatives, and just the tentative budget and revenue forecast. So just a couple more slides here. So the current service level budget adjustments. So just to make sure you have a solid understanding, the current service level takes the budget from the current biennium and brings it up to current law and makes all adjustments, any collective bargaining agreements that were negotiated, adds a specific inflation factor, the mandated caseloads, other changes to bring that budget up without making any policy decisions. So it can account for one-time fund shifts, other things like that. So the general starting point for you and the subcommittee will be the governor's budget current service level. And what's key about that is that does not include any enhancements. So if there are any add-ons, that the agency has requested, those are called policy option packages. Those are not included in the current service level.
Yeah, Representative.
Thank you. Does the department present those, their wish list to us, or do we ever see it?
Mr. Co-Chair and Representative, yes, the certain policy packages or enhancements were approved as part of the governor's budget, and they will work off of those packages.
So just the ones that made it to the governor's version?
Yeah, and you may hear about others, but agencies, the executive branch agencies are following the governor's lead on what those decisions were. Now, those are enhancements in policy packages, but there are also reductions, which you'll hear about, major reductions in certain of your agencies that you'll hear about as part of the governor's budget as well. This slide shows what the current legislatively approved budget is, and then the 2017-19 current service level plus the ballot measures, and then what that gap is being driven by. So there's the inflation for K-12 personal services, debt service roll-up, phase-ins, or which are programs or initiatives that maybe started midway through the biennium but rolled up or biennialized to 24 months. Position adjustments, again, the ballot measures, replacement of one-time funds, like the federal funds for the Affordable Care Act, other items like that. And I'm sorry, there's actually one more slide. And then this is the state wide general fund lottery fund picture. The governor's budget includes some new revenue features for income tax, tobacco, Oregon Liquor Control Commission, that require statutory authority. So the co-chair's framework budget is a current law resources budget. And with that, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee, that concludes today's overview. Tomorrow will be general government subcommittee specific information, kind of at this same level, by fund type, by budget category, and other such information.
Perfect. Is there any questions from the committee? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I think we're about wrapped up for the day. Yep. We're good. Mr. Co-Chair, is there anything we need to discuss? Are we good?
We're good. Excellent meeting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're in good hands with John. Michael, is there anything we need to think about? We're good?
Yes, sir.
All right. I always like to check with you before we check out here. All right. Members of the committee, anything else on the agenda we want to talk about? Anything else? We're good? We're going to adjourn then for the day. We're adjourned. We're going to adjourn then for the day. We're adjourned. We're good?